Hi everyone, this is Jonathan Parrington. I'm delighted that my guest today is Tiffany Bover. Tiffany is VP and Distinguished Analyst with Gartner, of course, and I guess there will be many of you listening to this that have had the opportunity to enjoy, rather than attend, one of Tiffany's fantastic presentations. In fact, I was with her in May now, I think, in London. We're both presenting at the Sales Expo, and she's a terrific speaker and thinker. Welcome, Tiffany.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, listen, I particularly wanted to invite you around for a cup of tea and a piece of cake and talk about recent webinar that you did and your thoughts really on, I guess I would describe it as fairly innovative thinking, in so much as you don't just believe that organizations should be customer-centric, but you've gone a lot deeper than that, and you really believe that we've got to understand our clients' and customers' processes and practices and alter our approach accordingly, right? Do you want to just share a bit more on that with us?
Yeah, thank you for the question, because I think that more than ever, we're talking more about customer experience, customer satisfaction, customer engagement, getting closer with our customers in new ways using digital technologies and other means. And the impact that has to a sales organization is fairly significant, I might say. You know, the processes that we've run sales organizations in the past and the training and the skills, et cetera, that we've had has really been an inside-out kind of view. You know, how do we gain transparency? How do we make sure we build predictability into the business? How do I make sure my sales force is doing what they're supposed to be doing? The very metric-driven management style. And it doesn't necessarily take into account what the customer is doing as they are going on their journey to engage with your organization, explore your organization, and then eventually, and hopefully, right, purchase from your organization. Mm. And because of those things, I think you really have to look at every step of the selling cycle and align that more closely to what the buyers actually want to do during their journey.
Do you think that buyers are more acutely aware of how they're being approached by a selling organization? Are they more sensitive to it? Are they more selective?
Well, I'd actually say that, you know, when I was began selling technology some 20 years ago, I always felt like I had to spend a lot of time educating the customer on what our products and services could do. Mm-hmm. I think 20 years later, the customers are far more educated. They're far more connected with their smartphones and the cost of bandwidth being low. And, you know, in some regions of the world, there's more smartphones than there are toothbrushes. You know, there's all kinds of metrics that people are much more comfortable with technology now. So they have a greater understanding of whatever it is that they're buying because of the fact that they're willing to go and search online and talk to people and learn about it before they make that initial reach out to a sales rep. And that is what throws sales for a loop, I think. We're so used to being more knowledgeable than our customers that we don't give them much credit for the knowledge they bring to the table when they first engage with us.
Sure. I mean, you know, we've seen various numbers, right, over the last 5 years. You and I have talked about this. And I think the last number I saw was the buyer is now 80% through their buying cycle before they engage with a selling company. And you know the thing that concerns me? How did it suddenly get to 80? I mean, I remember seeing it at 70, but I never remember seeing it at 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. And yeah, I mean, is 80% realistic?
Listen, I don't get caught around the axle on those numbers. I like to say that for sure, I think we all can agree, the buyer is further down the journey than they were 5 years ago. Right. And then further than they were 10, 15, or 20. So being further down the journey, whether it's 10 or 80, means you can't sell the same way. So if you believe the buyer is further down the journey, then you have to adjust because of that. Yeah. We've been doing some great research lately in trying to build the sales force of the future, and we're calling it the customer-driven sales organization. Mm. And we actually look at that question you just posed on, are they 80%? In four clear ways. And it doesn't matter how far they are down that buyer journey. who's making the purchase or what they're purchasing, the average sales price, complexity, et cetera. I tried to remove all of that to keep it really simple. The first thing I'd say is you have a customer who, number one, is I know what I want to buy and I'm ready to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue they're, right, 80% down the buyer journey. They could even be 95 or 99% down the buyer journey. They're already a customer of yours. They know what they want. They're ready to buy. Could be a replacement, could be an addition, could be a refresh, right? Lots of reasons why that's the case. Well, you could argue that they're very far down the buyer journey, and the likelihood of them not buying is fairly low. So sales action there is don't do anything, right?
Mm.
Like, let them buy. The next one is, I know what I want to buy, but I want to shop. I might want to shop because of price, feature, consumption model, right? I'm looking for cloud versus on-premise, or it could be service. I'm willing to shop. I might be a customer of yours, and so I'm shopping to make sure I'm getting the best price, even with maybe your same brand from a different dealer or retailer or distribution outlet. Or I'm looking for, you know, a consumption model difference. And so you could say, I know what I want. I'm ready to buy, but I want to shop. You could argue that's maybe 75 or 80% down the buyer journey.
Mm-hmm.
How sales responds to that is different than, I know what I want. I'm ready to buy. Get out of my way. Fair?
Yes.
Yeah. The third one is, I know I have a business problem. I don't know how to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is, I know I have a problem. I may have started to investigate how to solve it, and I'm some portion down the buyer journey, but I'm definitely not as far as I was in those other two scenarios. And so the sales response to that is, well, I have to help them understand how we can help them solve that business problem, why we're in the best position to solve that business problem. That's very different than the first two, where I know your brand, I know who you are, I know what I need, I'm ready to buy. This one is not that. And then the fourth one is, I don't know I have a problem,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not looking. And that's where something like potentially challenger selling would be really advantageous, right? Where you're going in and saying, hey, listen, I know something in the industry you don't know. I'm here to educate you, et cetera. Those four, for me, encapsulate pretty much everything. And that's the easiest way for me to say, okay, now training, sales, processes behind each of the four, what kind of skills, how much is digital, how much is human, how much is inside, how much is outside sales, et cetera, all of a sudden can map to those four. And they tend to be the density of hotspot. They're not the outliers of, well, everyone could give me 100 different permutations of how a customer is going to show up. But those four capture pretty much the bulk of it.
Yeah, and what you're really describing there is you've got three categories of reactive selling and one category of proactive selling. That's the first point I'd make. And the second point,
absolutely.
Yeah, and the second point I'd make is this tip. The first two categories that you describe, I know what I want to buy, or I think I know what I want to buy, but I'm going to shop around. I don't think as sellers we must ever take that as gospel, because there could well, and often is, a case of I know what I want to buy, when actually in reality I probably don't. And I think as sellers we do need to, and I hate to use the word challenge because I don't like it too much, but I think we've continually got to question it. Because in my experience, when somebody comes to us and says, I know what I want to buy, so sell it to me. And then they discover down the road that it wasn't exactly what they want. They're not going to blame themselves for making a poor decision. They're going to blame us for selling it to them.
Yeah, I would agree, except I can tell you that the subtlety between... So when I use that example of I know what I want to buy and I know what I need and I know what I want and I'm ready to buy, I was very specific in saying it was a repurchase, it was an expansion, meaning an example. I have 50 of these notebooks or desktops. I just hired 20 new people. I need 20 more.
Yeah.
You know, or I need 20 more licenses of Office because I hired 20 more people, or I need 5 more printers because I hired 20 more people. I already have what I'm going to buy and I need more. That's why I said it was a replacement, expansion, or refresh.
Yeah.
That's very different than I show up, I don't have what I think I know I need. That's very different.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that there's an opportunity for you to ask probing questions without outselling yourself. I mean, you know, I'll give an example. I walked into a retailer about 3 months ago, and I wanted to buy a monitor. I knew exactly what I wanted to get. I walked in, I asked him for it. He stood there for 10 minutes trying to sell me something else.
Yeah.
It was, you know, like, are you sure, what are you going to use it for? How are you going to use it? What's your lighting in your house? Like, asking me 100 questions.
Yeah.
And so what he did to me, basically, was he turned me off from buying from him.
Yeah.
So I backed up, I saw it, I started shopping online, I went somewhere else.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful to not turn off a potential buyer with too many probing questions, and then outsell yourself, right?
I agree.
Or overcomplicate it.
I agree. But you like me, will have experienced a number of times when I thought I knew what I wanted, and I was very pleased that someone actually said, by the way, Jonathan, have you actually thought about this? And it's really how it's communicated. Okay, and I said, no, actually, I haven't. What would be the advantages? What are the benefits? What's the difference in value and cost? And then they explain it to him, and I think, crikey, yeah, that's much better than what I was going to buy.
And I think you have to have, as a seller, you have to have the right skill to navigate that conversation in a way that it's not, sort of insulting or you're not, you know what I mean? There's a fine balance between being able to, have you earned permission to, you know, ask additional questions or challenge the customer in that way? Do they trust you that you're doing it for the right reasons? I mean, there's lots of things, subtlety that goes behind being able to do that, but I fully agree with you.
Yeah.
In a repurchase is very different than, I think I know what I want, you know, and it may take me down the wrong path, and I feel it's my duty, right, to make sure I'm giving you some options and have you thought of this, and you can make your decision on your own, and whatever you decide, I'm fully supportive of. But
yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with training.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's when you move from salesperson, you take off your salesperson's hat, and you actually become an advisor, and that's a completely different looking hat altogether, isn't it?
It is a different hat, but it also is an expensive cost of sale. So when you think about that, I'm ready to buy. I know what I want. You know, it depends on whether you're able to fund a consultative sale in a product category or a geo or an area of your business at that point that warrants that kind of sales strategy. Right. And to your point, not all customers are built the same. And so, you know, you may just say on those one deals that when people know what they want and they want to buy, we need to get out of their way. We need to put our limited resources against those, right, where we really need them, potentially the third and fourth scenario where, as you said, right, the proactive selling is where we need it. Do we really need consultative sellers on reactive? I don't know.
No, we don't. I mean, when particularly if you're talking about transactional situations, or as I like to call them, as you know, commodity sales, you wouldn't want to afford that type of selling or salesperson to do that. Now, listen, as you know, we're time constrained, but I've got an important question for you, because I know that I know the great work that you're doing over there at Gartner, and you know, you mentioned earlier in our chat that you've been thinking about the salesperson of the future and how selling is going to be conducted. But I want to ask you this. In the model that you're designing, is there greater emphasis on building brick walls around existing clients as opposed to spending 80% of the time, which I believe is absolutely accurate throughout the various industries? 80% of time, selling time and managing time is being spent on winning new business. 20% is being spent on looking after the existing customers that we've got and growing them, even though we know 80% of the business in a typical organization is going to come from existing customers in any 12-month period. So I want to ask you, Tiff, is that going to be even part of your new model?
It's a fantastic question, and here's what I'd say there. Is that I think with the advancements of digital marketing, there are ways in which you can touch existing customers in new ways that makes it feel like that 20% spent on them is 40 or 50%, right? So if you get smart using tools to stay connected to the existing customers, not with humans, right? Could be with systems and processes, and then you drop humans in, your inside sales team at very specific points in time. You know, this combination of the two means that you can actually hug your customers more new and different ways. And so it can actually drive greater loyalty. The only fear I have is if you only spend 20% in your existing base of customers, they are your advocates.
Yeah.
They are your champions.
Yeah.
And when your new customers you're trying to get are on their journey, the first place they go to find out about your company is your existing customers.
Yeah.
So if you don't treat your customers well, it's not going to help your efforts in trying to get new customers. So
yeah.
I think that you have to think differently about the usage of digital tools and digital marketing as a way to connect with both new and existing customers in a combination with inside and field resources, in the combination with your customer service. Any customer-facing resources have the ability to drive increased loyalty and share of wallet into your existing base of customers. So I think that thinking about it a little bit differently, not hard and fast on the percentages, I just think we have to be aware that our existing base are our advocates, and if you ignore them, it's doing you no favors with the net new acquisition efforts you're doing.
Absolutely. And you know something? I love it when existing clients actually move on from being advocates to evangelists.
Absolutely. That's the goal. And if you only spend 20% of time on them, you know, sometimes that's a little bit at risk.
Yes.
Especially if you have a smaller sales organization, right? It gets really difficult to spread thin. You know, how do you go after, you know, and hunt new business while you're farming existing business with a small sales force is really difficult. That's why digital is really helpful to make sure you stay engaged with those customers in different ways than just the human interaction, which tends to be too expensive for most.
Sure. It's a very, very good point. Tiff, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our recording time. How would you like the listeners to stay in touch with you?
Well, I'd love for them to follow me on Twitter. It is Tiffany_Bova, and it's TiffanyBova. Or connect with me on LinkedIn, drop me a note. You know, always great to hear real-world examples of where people are either seeing or not seeing what I'm saying. It always keeps my research fresh, and I always appreciate getting feedback.
Absolutely. All right, Tiff, absolute pleasure hosting you today. And do come back soon, won't you?
Anytime, Jonathan. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Okay, everybody, hope you enjoyed that. It's fascinating, and I never get tired of talking to Tiff, one of the leading thought leaders in the sales space right now. So I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Do come back soon. We'll have a new fresh conversation every week. This is Jonathan Farrington. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.